What makes a slim political manifesto outsell nearly every other book of its era and reshape an entire nation's ideological landscape? In 1960, a plain-spoken Arizona senator published a book that would sell 3.5 million copies and ignite a conservative revolution. Ronald Reagan credited it with transforming his worldview, just as Clarence Thomas called it life-changing. Yet, this wasn't a book of soaring rhetoric or complex theory. It was something far more powerful, a direct challenge to the assumption that bigger government meant better lives. At its core lay a simple but radical idea. Conservatism isn't about economics or policy prescriptions. It's about recognizing the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and understanding that freedom cannot be compartmentalized or compromised. Here's where most people misunderstand conservatism. They think it's primarily about tax rates and free markets, a cold calculus of dollars and cents. That's socialism's game, reducing human existence to material well-being, treating people as economic units to be managed. The conservative vision sees something socialism cannot. Each person possesses an immortal soul, unique potential, and inherent dignity that no government can grant or legitimately take away. This distinction matters more than it might seem. When you view people primarily as economic beings, you inevitably conclude that government should manage their material welfare. But when you recognize the spiritual dimension of human nature, you understand that individual development must come from within, guided by personal values rather than bureaucratic mandates. Economic and political freedoms aren't separate categories, they're inseparably linked. You cannot have one without the other, because the power to control your economic choices is ultimately the power to control your life. Throughout history, genuine conservatism has opposed both autocrats and collectivists who debase individual dignity. The goal isn't winning elections or implementing particular policies, it's preserving maximum freedom consistent with necessary social order, while recognizing that political power constantly seeks to expand beyond proper boundaries. Freedom isn't a permanent condition, it requires eternal vigilance because it's never more than one generation away from extinction. If a job needs doing and no one else can do it, then it's a proper function of federal government. This seemingly reasonable statement, embraced by both parties, completely repudiates limited government. It suggests government can do whatever needs doing, with government itself determining those needs. This is totalitarianism's first principle: the state is competent to do all things. We have not kept this republic. Federal government has expanded into education, agriculture, housing, and healthcare, with executive and judicial branches exceeding constitutional boundaries without proper amendments. We repeatedly elected leaders who expanded programs, trading freedom for comfort. As Tocqueville warned, Americans have allowed themselves to be led by guardians they themselves chose. The turn will come only when we elect officials committed to divesting themselves of power, a rare quality in politics, but essential to preserve the republic our founders established. States' rights form the cornerstone of our republic and chief bulwark against federal encroachment on individual freedom. Yet neither party maintains meaningful commitment to this principle. Republicans champion returning rightful powers while summoning federal authority whenever states displease Washington. One insidious method is grants and aid, federal programs using blackmail and bribery. States feel compelled to accept their fair share of revenue, making refusal political suicide. The fundamental error lies in treating the Constitution as political theory rather than binding law. The 10th Amendment isn't a general assumption, it's a prohibitory rule recognizing states' jurisdiction. Consider education. The Constitution grants no federal authority over education, yet Washington increasingly dictates policy through funding requirements. Citizens unhappy with state programs should pressure state officials or elect new ones, not summon federal intervention. Nothing would advance freedom more than state officials asserting rightful claims to lost power and federal government withdrawing from reserved jurisdictions. This isn't about defending particular policies, it's about defending the constitutional structure protecting all our freedoms. Hamilton correctly foresaw that federal intervention in agriculture would prove troublesome. This constitutional overreach has destroyed personal freedom and created economic chaos, unmanageable surpluses, immense tax burdens, high consumer prices, and vexatious controls. The Constitution gives no power over agriculture to any branch of national government. When the first Agricultural Adjustment Act was struck down, Congress repackaged identical legislation as Regulation of Interstate Commerce. Federal intrusion hasn't solved the farm problem, but has added production controls restricting freedom. Farm production is best controlled by free markets. When farmers sell at prices consumers will pay, they produce what can be consumed. Similarly, unwise labor legislation has shifted the balance dramatically to union leaders' advantage. Compulsory unionism violates freedom of association. Right-to-work laws, which forbid making union membership a condition of employment, protect this natural right. Evidence shows that in all 19 states with such laws, union membership actually increased after passage. Just as we outlawed corporate monopolies through antitrust laws, we should apply the same principle to labor unions. When the UAW negotiates with the entire auto industry, a single monolith faces multiple competing companies, resulting in excessive wage demands and higher consumer prices. The enemy of freedom is unrestrained power, regardless of who wields it. The principal domestic threat to freedom has shifted from Marxist collectivization to the welfare state. Collectivists discovered socialism can be achieved through welfarism, confiscating property through taxation rather than expropriation. Individuals become dependent on the state from cradle to grave. For donors, there's no moral virtue in voting to confiscate one person's earnings for another's benefit. For recipients, it mortgages them to federal government and eliminates their sense of responsibility. The greatest evil? Welfareism transforms dignified, self-reliant spiritual beings into dependent creatures without their knowing it. Taxation has been stripped of its moral principles, reduced to mere public financing. We've been led to believe government has unlimited claim on our wealth, when natural law's foremost precept is a man's right to his property. A family man earning $4,500 annually works 7 full days each month for government. America is already 1/3 socialized. The graduated tax is fundamentally confiscatory, aiming to bring all men to a common level. Substantial spending cuts require eliminating unconstitutional programs. Federal government must withdraw from social welfare, education, public power, agriculture, housing, and urban renewal. By reducing taxes and spending, we return to individuals the means to assert their freedom while guaranteeing economic strength that will always be the nation's ultimate defense. Perfecting domestic freedom means nothing if we lose the Cold War. We face a revolutionary movement determined to dominate the globe, possessing military power rivaling ours, superior political warfare skills, an international fifth column, and an ideology giving adherents a sense of historical mission. America's deteriorating position stems from one fact. Our enemies understand this conflict and are determined to win, while we don't and aren't. Communists aim to conquer the world. Our objective has been peace while they wage war. Our alliance system has critical defects: incomplete coverage, no protection against political penetration, and a completely defensive nature. Like a boxer refusing to throw a punch, a defense-bound nation will eventually be cut down. In 14 years, we've committed over $80 billion to foreign aid, harming taxpayers, fostering waste, creating anti-Americanism. The fundamental flaw? Our aid increasingly goes to neutrals or enemies based on the fallacious stomach theory that prosperity prevents communism. A man's politics stem from his mind, not his stomach. Our strategy must be offensive. We must strike blows, puncture their frontiers, maintain decisive military superiority. Our goal must be victory, not coexistence, but the defeat of an ideology threatening everything we hold dear. The conservative vision applies timeless principles to present challenges: limited government, individual liberty, free markets, strong national defense, and traditional values. The choice is clear. continue expanding government power while diminishing individual responsibility, or reclaim the founders' vision of a nation where freedom is cherished, responsibility is honored, and enemies of liberty are confronted with resolve. Conservatism honors the whole person, material and spiritual, individual and communal. True progress comes from unleashing human potential through freedom, not government dictates. A nation's strength lies in the character of its citizens, not the size of its government. Freedom must be fought for, protected, and handed on to each generation. The conservative vision offers freedom's last best hope, not just for America, but for all who cherish human dignity and liberty. Stand up, speak out, reclaim the principles that made America exceptional.